The Secret Cases of Sherlock Holmes, written by Donald Thomas and read by John Telfer.
A Letter to Posterity from John H. Watson, M.D. Those who have read my narrative of the Brixton Road murder, made public under the somewhat sensational title of A Study in Scarlet, will recall the events which led to my first meeting with the late Sherlock Holmes. For any who come new to this story, let me recapitulate the circumstances as briefly as I may. Having taken my medical degree at the University of London in 1878, I had attended the required course of the Army Medical Department at Netley. When my time at Netley was over, I was attached as assistant surgeon to the 5th Northumberland Fusiliers. I will not repeat in detail how I landed in Bombay when my regiment was already in action in the Second Afghan War, how I joined it at Kandahar, only to be wounded in the shoulder, my active service career terminated by a jezail bullet at the Battle of Maiwand. It was not the wound received in battle that alone decided my fate. Enteric fever, contracted at the base hospital of Peshawar, so weakened and emaciated me that the medical board had not the least hesitation in ordering my return to England. A few months later, I was endeavouring, without success, to lead a comfortless existence at a private hotel in the Strand upon my invalid allowance of 11 shillings and 6 pence a day. The weeks of summer passed in 1880, and I watched with dismay as my little stock of capital ran lower. I had no family in England, no expectations, no one to whom I could turn for immediate assistance. My state of mind may easily be imagined as I contemplated the loss of both health and independence. In such gloomy circumstances, I had taken a turn down Piccadilly one morning in July. That fashionable avenue was busy with swan's neck polentum carriages drawn by glossy bay geldings, here and there a coach with armorial bearings upon its door, and 100 hansom cabs. Among these symbols of imperial prosperity, I reflected that walking costs a man nothing. The clocks had struck 12 as I began to make my way back from the trees and carriages of Hyde Park Corner, where the pretty horsebreakers and their escorts rode under the leafy branches of Rotten Row. In the course of this stroll, I had decided that my first economy must be to leave the private hotel where I had been living. I would seek cheaper lodgings. With that, I felt a little richer, and entered the old Criterion Bar in Coventry Street. It was a chance in 10,000 that, as I stood at the bar, I should have been tapped on the shoulder by young Stamford, who had been a surgical dresser under me at Bart's Hospital. To him I described my situation and my new resolve as to where I should live. He it was who mentioned his acquaintance, Sherlock Holmes, a man also in search of diggings. That very day Holmes had been bemoaning to Stamford that he could not get someone to go halves with him in a nice set of rooms which he had found, but which were too much for his purse. I recall, as if it were only a week ago, my excitement at this chance of solving my own problem so easily. I turned to Stamford and exclaimed, "By Jove, if your friend really wants someone to share the rooms and the expense, I'm the very man for him. I should prefer going halves to living alone." As yet, I had not set eyes upon my unwitting partner. This is not the place to draw a complete portrait of him who was to be my friend and companion for so many years. I must say, however, that in all the time I knew him, the appearance of Sherlock Holmes seemed to alter no more than his demeanour. He was a little over 6 feet in height, and throughout his life he remained so lean that he looked, if anything, taller. His eyes were sharp, and his gaze penetrating. His nose was thin and hawk-like, making him seem always alert and decisive. His jaw was firmly set, square and prominent, with a look of resolve and determination.